morning, everyone. Welcome to today's this month's Ag Sector Council. We're being joined today by Dr. Fahn, Director General of the International Food Research Policy Institute. And I'd just like to make a couple of quick announcements and some just rules of the road. If you could please silence or turn off your cell phones while you're here, so we don't have interruptions. Also, during the talk, please save questions until the end when we have Q&A, because our online participants can't hear if someone here is not speaking into a mic. So please save them until the end so that everyone can participate. I'd also like to note that tomorrow we have another event. This one will be taking place at QED. We'll also be on webinar. QED is located at 1250 I Street Northwest here in DC on the 11th floor. This one is going to be talking about land issues in Africa and the impacts on food policy and food security. So please join us for that one. We'll have Tom Jane from Michigan State University and then also Carol Boudreau from USAID's land tenure team speaking. We also are going to have a one-day conference / workshop around the agricultural biotech program run out of USAID's Bureau for Food Security. That will be taking place on June 5th. It will be all day, but it will also be on webinar, so you can join us online for that. Please check out AgriLinks for information on these events and other upcoming events. And please feel to join AgriLinks and participate with the conversation online, too. With that, I would like to introduce our Julie Howard, who is the chief scientist and senior advisor to the administrator here at USAID, who will be doing the introduction for Dr. Fahn. Thank you.
Thanks, Zachary. And welcome to all of you for this important discussion on setting investment priorities for food security and poverty reduction. It seems like a really incredible timing that Shengen, you should be with us to discuss this topic, hot off the G8 discussions where we were discussing exactly this, what should G8 priorities be in this area over the next 10 years. We're facing some pretty hefty challenges over the foreseeable future. We've got 1.4 billion people at least living in extreme poverty. We've got the additional challenge of really needing to increase our production by 70% or more over the next 50 years. And we have some other sort of challenges, climate change, food price volatility, things that are affecting smallholders and rural dwellers on a day-to-day basis. So we have some good kind of opportunities as well. I think in much of the developing world, we are seeing kind of a rebirth, a resurgence of interest, private sector investment, and interesting kind of private sector investment where companies are looking at what kind of investments they might make to touch the lives of rural poor and to increase their incomes. We have some challenges and good opportunities also sort of in our increasing recognition of how tightly bound up poverty, nutrition are, and sort of challenges in addressing those jointly along with looking at some of the environmental challenges that we have. So sort of a trifecta of challenges and opportunities. I think what's fairly certain for the foreseeable future is that we'll have, we hope, steady but possibly declining public sector resources to deal with these enormous challenges. And so it's wonderful to have Shengen Fahn with us today because he spent most of his career, possibly much of his life, thinking about these challenges. Shengen Ifpri has been, of course, an incredible thought partner always for USAID. And Shengen, particularly since you have joined Ifpri as its director in 2009, we rely on Ifpri more and more. So Shengen grew up in rural China during a time of immense transformation in China's own rural sector. His PhD at University of Minnesota, he's a recipient of many, many awards. At Ifpri, he has directed Ifpri's program on public investment. So he's done a lot of research and thinking himself about how to strategically prioritize public sector investments in rural space. And then following that, he directed IFPRI's program on governance and development strategy before becoming IFPRI's director. So, Shengen, we're very much interested in what you have to say. It's very timely. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Julie. Well, it's really a great pleasure to see some of the friends here. For the last several years, IFPRI has been working very closely with USAID as a partner to really, really push the global food security and nutrition security to very high in the global development agenda. So what I'm going to do here today is to look at the investment priorities. So I have several key messages here. The first is donors and the national governments have really increased their support to food and nutrition security. So we have seen a movement for the last 3 or 4 years, particularly after 2007-2008 food crisis. So donors, national governments are really committed to agriculture. While more support is important, and it's a very critical, crucial, but investment priorities are equally important, if it's not more important. And from our study and from my own study, Johnny said that, in fact, I spent most of my research career, on investment issues. So how to measure the investment, how to assess the impact of different types of investment in terms of their economic returns, in terms of their poverty reduction impact, and impact on malnutrition. Our conclusion shows that investment in agriculture, R&D, and early childhood nutrition have very high returns, so the highest returns among all types of investments. Finally, reliable data and a strong capacity are crucial for monitoring trends and to analyze priorities. So some of our studies use very crude data. We have to use certain innovative ways to guesstimate many data required. I think as we move forward, we really needed to improve the data quality, the mechanisms to connect the data, to monitor, to track the progress, and to continue to analyze the priorities, because the priorities are very dynamic. So today's priority will be very different from tomorrow's, and obviously very different from 20 or 30 years ago. So renewed attention to agriculture and more support to agriculture, food, and nutrition security. You have heard that during the G8 meetings, President Obama mentioned food security, nutrition security, 5, maybe even 10 times. I remember during the Chicago Council Conference on Friday, about 2 weeks ago, and it's just so exciting to see a president of a very large country mention food and nutrition security. And I have been traveling around the world, and it's the first time to see that excitement. And in addition to donors and national governments, as Johnny said, the private sector, philanthropic organizations have also increased their investment in agriculture, in food security. I will touch this issue a bit later. So increased donor investment. This chart shows you the ODA to agriculture by OECD countries. You see it's like a roller coaster. Around 1970, the donors spend about 5 to 10% of their total aid on agriculture. And that percentage increased to 15-20% around 82-86. Then the trend really has come down dramatically, particularly after 1990. So in the 1990s, we call it the lost decade, 1990s. The donors have really reduced their support to agriculture. The good news is in the last several years, particularly since 2005, the donors has begun to increase their investment in agriculture. And as a share of total ODA, right now it's about 5 to 6%. We really argue that the OECD countries should also commit at least 10%, if not 15%, of their ODA to agriculture. African leaders committed 10% of their national budget to support agriculture. And during the Green Revolution a period in Asia, like China, India, Vietnam, they spent 15-20% of their national budget on agriculture. And the rising public investment on agriculture over decades, you will see in many parts of the world, particularly in Asia, in the 80s, these countries spend 10% of their national budget on agriculture. India spent 15 to 20% of their national budget on agriculture in the 60s, in the 70s. And although that share has declined, but as a percentage of agriculture GDP, that trend has increased. One of the reasons is the share of agriculture sector in total economy has declined. So you will see the intensity of agricultural investment has increased over time. It's from 9% in the 80s to 7% in 1990s, and today it's 11%, 12%, even 13%. And for Africa, this is one of the areas, one of the regions we really needed to pay attention to. Today, the percentage of their total expenditure in agriculture is about 6% compared to probably 4% back in 2003 when the African leaders made a declaration in Maputo to use 10% of their national budget to support agriculture. So some progress, but more needs to be done for Africa. And particularly in terms of the percentage of agriculture GDP, so many other regions have increased their intensity, but not Africa, because the share of agriculture sector in total economy is still very high, very strong. So although the share of the national budget in agriculture has increased, but that increase has not been matched by rapid growth in agriculture sector. So GDP, agriculture GDP growth in many countries have increased by 6%, 7% per year. Look at the figures in China and India. For China, from 2006 to 2012, the government expenditures on agriculture increased by five times. India, the growth is not as fast as China, but the spending there has also increased substantially by three times, from 2005, 2006 to 2011, 2012. So if you look at the whole world picture on the agriculture investment, government investment in agriculture, these two countries really dominated growth in the last 5 or 6 years. CADF, as I mentioned, the African leaders really committed themselves to use 10% of their national budget to support 6% agriculture growth. As I see, it's also a movement. I have seen many African countries have really increased the investment in agriculture, and 29 countries have signed CADF compacts, and many 23 countries have prepared investment plans. So the G8 commitment will use some of these plans to really set the priorities, to set certain mechanisms to really align the G8's priorities to countries' priorities. From 2003 to 2009, about 7 or 8 countries met the Maputo Declaration target, that's a 10%. But this is the average from 2003 to 2009. So on average, 6 countries have achieved 10% target. So these countries include Burkina Faso, Niger, Ethiopia, Senegal, Mali. However, if you look at the recent figures, it's not just average. The figures in 2008, 2009, actually more than 10 countries have exceeded 10% target. So tremendous progress has been made, but more needs to be made. For example, you look at some of the countries on the NAFTA side, the majority of the countries still spend 5%, 4% of their national budget on agriculture. Well, 5% is here, so I think actually more than half of the countries spend less than 5% of the national budget on agriculture. Now, well, more support obviously is important. This is another movement I have seen at the global level. G8 not only this year, G8 in 2009, they committed $22-23 billion to support food security, particularly to support smallholders' food security by helping the countries to develop their own strategies, their own investment plans. That was a good commitment, but it's very important to move that commitment to actual implementation. So today, just from our own estimation, so less than half of that money has actually been implemented. So $22 or $23 billion. Different figures come out from different groups. Certain groups say only 25%, and certain groups say less than 50%. But the bottom line is the G8 countries have not really met the commitment they made in 2009. Now G20 it's not just money. I mean, it's a partnership. So how the G20 countries can work together better. The G20 group includes some of the large food producers and the consumers and the traders, Brazil, China, India, and Indonesia. So more important is the partnership, how they can work together to refrain the trade export bans, avoid speculations, and refrain the biofuel production, and set up certain grain reserves. And B20, I should say, it's Las Cabos, not Keynes anymore. This is the old logo. So B20, the business community, have also set up a group to work together and to use their investment to support food and nutrition security. IPRI is part of the B20 group to provide knowledge information to support their commitments. In April, so the group went to Mexico. They met with the Mexican president and presented their commitment and their statement to Mexico G8 group. G20 group. And Sun Initiative, they're scaling up nutrition, focusing on children under 1,000 days from the pregnancy to second birthday. And the Global Food and Agriculture Security Program, the World Bank, under the World Bank leadership, just last week, they committed support to a bunch of new countries in Africa, as well as in Central Asia and the rest of the world. The World Economic Forum has really become a global platform for global leaders to come together to share the information, to improve the transparency of their operation. And I found the World Economic Forum is very, very critical in terms of creating some sort of informal network for different stakeholders to interact with each other. In fact, it is during the World Economic Forum the business communities came together and developed a vision for agriculture, a new vision for agriculture for business communities. And Feed of the Future, I don't need to say anything about this program here. You know probably better than I do. But the priorities of investment are equally important. Well, this is just some of the figures from G8 commitment, shared commitment between G8, African countries, and the private sector. The $3 billion pledge to lift 50 million poor people out of poverty over the next 10 years. So we do have some concrete measures, and the scaling up nutrition was also part of the G8 declaration. And finally, support for biofortification, crop diversification, and related technologies. IPRI is leading a program on biofortification supported by Bill Melinda Gates Foundation, the UK Department of Development, USAID. So it's a very exciting program. I'm glad that G8 actually mentioned this program specifically. Priorities matter, and it matters a lot. This chart shows the returns to different types of investment over time in India, so in the 70s, 80s, and the 90s. So you will see the priorities change over time. Priorities differ across different types of investment. Priority also differs, depends on your objective of your investment, whether it is returns to agriculture growth, whether it's a returns to rural poverty reduction. A couple of features here from this table. One is returns to rural roads. Returns to agriculture research are very high compared to any other type of investment. In fact, in terms of agriculture GDP or agriculture growth, agriculture research investment had some of the highest returns. But in terms of poverty reduction, it's a rural roads. This is because rural roads affect poverty reduction not only through agriculture growth, but also from non-farm employment, through migration, and through many other different channels, so going beyond agriculture. But the whole picture does not change. The returns to roads to agriculture research are very high. And they are very high in the 60s, 70s. They are very high in the 80s and the 90s. I guarantee you they are also very high today. However, if you look at the investment or the subsidies, irrigation subsidies, fertilizer subsidies, power subsidies, credit subsidies. So now, you know, in Africa, there's a debate whether the countries can use fertilizer subsidies as a silver bullet to solve the food security problem. Our study from India shows that in the very initial stage, the returns to these subsidies actually are quite high in terms of growth, in terms of poverty reduction. However, as the time moves, this impact comes down dramatically. So the effects come down dramatically. This is because in the very beginning, certain subsidies will help smallholders to adopt fertilizers, to adopt new seeds, and get to use irrigation. So it's the market will not be able to do that. So to me, it's a way to correct a market failure. However, as the times move, the subsidies begin to increase, then the political interest begin to form. So the subsidies continue to increase, and then their marginal return comes down dramatically. So in fact, in the 90s, most of the subsidies have very small returns, almost zero returns, a statistically insignificant impact on agriculture growth, on poverty reduction. And similar findings came from China. The returns to R&D is very high. In fact, that's $1 or 1 yuan investment, the return could be 10, could be 7. So it's a very high return. So usually you have $1 investment, $2 return. That's just a tremendous return. I mean, if you invest in Wall Street, you're not going to get this returns. Education here comes out very strong. Rural roads also come out here very strong. Education comes here very strong, mainly because the migration and the rural non-farm employment. The education was critical for rural young people to move to cities to set up a business in the rural sector. So that's why the returns to education investment are quite high, particularly in terms of poverty reduction. Another feature of this study is great, great regional difference. Particularly in some of the marginal land areas or in some of the less developed areas, Western China. The coastal China is well developed, Shanghai, Guangzhou, even Beijing. So these provinces and cities are in coastal China. Now, Western China is less developed, poor infrastructure, poor education. But from economics terms, marginal return to investment in Western China actually are very high, particularly in terms of R&D investment, in terms of education, and clearly in terms of poverty reduction impacts will be much greater in Western China because majority of the poor, hungry people are concentrated in Western China. So when we move to Africa, do these findings hold in the region? So we launched a couple of studies in Africa, Tanzania, Uganda, Ethiopia. So this is a finding from Uganda. Returns to agriculture investment, again, is very high. So every 1 shilling invested, more than 10 shillings will be returned. And in terms of poverty reduction, agriculture research, again, also has very high impact. There is great, great regional variations, both in terms of the impact on agriculture growth and in terms of poverty reduction. Impact in Ethiopia. So again, the results show that returns to rural infrastructure is very high. So highest, several times higher than the second largest return from education. But without the roads, then the market will not work, extension will not reach to farmers, and you cannot move your produce out. And there's a great variation across regions as well. But surprisingly, we found that the investment in agriculture didn't show up a very high return. Many reasons. One is probably efficiency of agriculture spending. Another reason is we did this study back in the probably earlier of this millennium, 2000 to 2000, 2001. We know that in the last 4 or 5 years, the Ethiopian government has really increased its investment in agriculture research, in extension, in improving irrigation. So if we redo the study, the results may come up differently. So this is a summary table from different studies, different countries, different regions, Ghana, Uganda, Tanzania, Ethiopia, it's African countries, China, India, Asia, and Thailand, it's another country from Asia. So the conclusions remain, a conclusion hold. Returns to agriculture investment are very high, not only in terms of their growth, but also in terms of their poverty reduction. Returns to roads are high. Returns to education are also very high. Now, the new study just came out from a so-called Copenhagen consensus. A bunch of economists, probably the best economists in the world, Nobel Prize laureates, rank different type of investments using documents prepared by different institutions, or IPRI prepared the documents on the returns to agriculture research investment, returns to investment in improving childhood nutrition. So a background paper we prepared. So this economists rank fighting malnutrition among preschoolers as number one. So they think this investment has highest return, although it's different from our own study because we didn't include any nutritional impact in our study. So we cannot make a judgment from my own study. Then increase agriculture output yield enhancement through agriculture research also has a very high return. So their estimates are much bigger, much greater than ours. So normally we would have 1 to 10 or 1 to 5 cost-benefit ratios. But this economist says that $1 investment, the returns could be 30 in the case of reducing malnutrition for children, and 16 in terms of agriculture productivity improvement through R&D. So I reviewed that document. One of the reasons probably they have taken into consideration of the climate change impact or other social economic impact that we have not taken into consideration in our own estimation. So capacity building is so important in doing this. So IPRI and our partners have done all this estimation. Copenhagen Consensus Group have also used the background papers. Don't forget, all these papers, all this work are done by international organizations or done by institutions in the north. So limited, one is a lack of reliable data. We got to work hard to improve our data connection in public investment. So their reliability and also timely connection of the data. So sometimes the data are 2 or 3 years old. And a limited capacity in policy making and strategy formulation. So many countries lack capacity in formulating their investment priorities. Even they have information, even they have knowledge about the returns to different type of investment. So with capacity in setting investment priorities and designing investment plans. Most of these 23 investment plans prepared for CADAP had enough help from many institutions, FAO, IPRI, universities here in the U.S. I really hope in the future this plan should really, really be prepared by their own analysts. A lack of research support for policy. We know that universities, think tanks in Africa, in South Asia are very weak, and the absence of M&E system. So when the investments are made, we needed to track, monitor the impact, the progress, and use that as a management tool, use that as a tool to reprioritize investments. So IPRI is doing some limited work in Africa. For example, a program called AgriDAP. We formed a network of researchers, particularly modernists, in Africa to really frame agriculture in a much broader context for agriculture, using the economy-wide modeling structure to put agriculture in a broader framework. So agriculture growth will contribute to overall economic growth, overall poverty reduction, overall food security, so going beyond agriculture. In the meantime, linking to very detailed data from the household, rural households. RACEX is an initiative created by IPRI and other CGIAR centers to support CADAP implementation. So we started this work in 2004, 2005, so right after the Maputo Declaration. So we set up this initiative to track, monitor the country's commitment to use agriculture to support agriculture growth, to support poverty reduction, and guides to set up a country's nodes right now. So we are moving to the country level, not only at the regional level, sub-regional level, we're also moving to the country to help the country to set up this knowledge information system. So RACEX indicates or means regional strategic analysis and a knowledge support system, and providing tools for policymakers, policy analysts, and help the CADAP to develop M&E framework. And we also produce an annual trends and outlook report. So some of the figures from Africa to show their trends of their commitments to agriculture came from this initiative. So in conclusion, increased support is important. We got to keep the momentum. But investment priorities are equally important. So if we don't set the right priorities, actually, sometimes total investment will not come. So we waste our money. It's very difficult to convince investors to give more money. And investments in agriculture, R&D, and early childhood nutrition have high returns. I'm glad that the U.S. government is really pushing this technology platform for Africa to link African research system with some of the private sector, some of the universities here in the U.S. And reliable data and a strong capacity are crucial for monitoring trends and to analyze priorities. So if we wanted to align our priorities, G8 priorities, G20 priorities, to country plans, country priorities, the country have to have that capacity to set the right priorities. Otherwise, we align to the wrong priorities. Thank you.